Thanks, Mark. We'll be switching gears here a little bit from big data to small big data, from large collaborative groups to kind of individual researchers looking to acquire some of these skills. Today I'm going to be talking about a PhD project by Michelle A. Pittal, the first author here, to describe and compare bacteria associated with rice production in Brazil. But I'll also be talking more about our experiences as novice Mother users. Mother, for those of you who don't know, is a suite of free open access microbial ecology tools designed and maintained by Pat Schloss. So Michele is a student of Victor and Lydia, and they designed and executed the project and sample collection. Erin Scully is a postdoc at the ARS in Lincoln, Nebraska. She's an applied Mother expert. She and Michele are the ones who did all of the analysis that I'll be sharing with you today. And I hosted Michele on her visit to the United States, and Jennifer, my technician, guided Michele through all of the pre-sequencing DNA quality and control steps. These are the four parts of my talk today. We'll start with a description of the system. Study samples were collected from irrigated rice fields in the south of Brazil. Brazil produces about 12 million tons of rice annually, and most of that is produced in this Rio Grande do Sul region. Here's a photo of the river that serves as the irrigation water for the sample site. It's a mixed-use watershed. As you can see from this picture, the rice paddy fields are characterized by flood water covering the field surface during the periods of cultivation. During the development cycle, the plants absorb and release ions, which can influence bacterial colonization of plant roots. Young plants likely have different communities than the older plants, reproductive plants. There are a number of people studying rice bacterial communities associated with the roots. Michele is interested in the bacteria in the irrigation water. And here are some more photos of the actual system in which she's working in. She's characterizing bacteria from the sediment and suspended particulate matter associated with the irrigation water. Okay, so what kind of questions is she asking? These are simple questions, descriptive questions, compared to some of the presentations we saw earlier. I'm going to start with a blast from the past. Another famous researcher who worked in Brazil, Henry Walter Bates, he worked with Alfred Wallace, spent 11 years in the Amazon collecting and cataloging birds and insects. The main purpose of their travel was to gather facts towards solving the problem of the origin of the species. And you might recognize his name after 11 years of cataloging, figuring out what was there. He was able to start to understand some of the relationships, and he developed the Batesian theory of mimicry in butterflies, where if you look like a bad-tasting butterfly, you're less likely to get eaten. So in parallel with their goal, Michele's goal is to gather facts towards harnessing the biological nitrogen fixation for rice. So just as the first step in Bates's 11-year journey was to go in and see, well, what is actually there, let's make a list, so too, that's where this journey starts as well. And that is the question that we were addressing here today. So we'll be focusing on the results that Michele got with the 16S sequencing. But she also characterized and compared her samples using a variety of other methods. Okay, methods. I'm going to give a brief apology here. There's some cute slides coming up. I'm not generally a fan of cute slides, especially in science talks, but time is limited and it conveys some ideas very quickly. So are you ready to dip your toe into the ocean that is next generation sequencing? Some people, and a lot of those presenting today, you know, they take to these new methods as if it was something they were born to do. For anybody with a basic to moderate understanding of computer operating system structure, programming, and troubleshooting, the path, though not without challenges, the path is clear. And then there are those of us who are excited by these methods and their possibilities. I want to jump in head first, but it takes us a little longer to get the skills we need in order to be able to effectively swim in the ocean. And there may be some of you out there who will learn these methods if you have to, but you're somewhat reluctant about jumping in. So I'm speaking to those second two groups of which I'm a part. This is what the mother interface looks like on the web. Dr. Schloss has wiki pages for each of the commands that describes them very clearly, as well as a series of SOPs, including an SOP for various kinds of next-generation sequencing data. This is the flowchart of the Mother 454 SOP. It's great that he has made the tools freely available, but also now has the SOPs to guide you through the steps. What we found very helpful about having this SOP was knowing in which order to use the commands. That was very helpful to us. For us with no IT background, we found these mother tools to be the most accessible. There was a workshop on Kine, which is also great once you get it started and running on your system. But if you're just working with your regular desktop computer and don't have a strong IT background, getting it started can be a hurdle. And with this, you're able to access it immediately. Okay, so Michelle and I, we had that clear path. We started out to do our analysis. All we had to do was just follow the steps that were there on the web, all very clearly described. But this was our fate. Until we found Dr. Aaron Scully, who was able to help guide us through the analysis. She's able to give us some basic information on both general command line protocols and mother-specific quirks that allowed us to smoothly process the rest of our data set. For example, the idea always start mother in the directory you want to work in and run these set directory commands. In theory, you shouldn't have to do that. You should be able to direct it to go wherever you want to do. But on a practical sense, when it comes to troubleshooting, you do this first and you solve a lot of your downstream problems. So having somebody to guide us through these little details that aren't clear when you're just reading the wiki pages was very helpful for us. Okay, this is a flowchart of the first few steps in pink. Are the commands from the 454 SOP. On my right, your left as you look at your radio dial, are the input files, and then on the right are the files that come out of each command. Boxed in red or some other color are the output files that serve as later as input files later down, and you can see there's a fairly easy progression. If you know what you're doing, there's some shortcuts built in so that you don't always have to type out the file names. Sometimes you need to use output files from a couple of different commands as an input file for a later step, and you need to be careful what order you run things in or if you rerun your files. And sometimes, if you look at unique seeks, they're in yellow. Sometimes the input names are the same as the output names. A lot of these little details that as you're trying to go through it yourself, having somebody just tell you what to look for ends up being very helpful if you can have a guide. Okay, so we made it through. There are, how do I go back? We were able to do all of the steps ourselves, except for the SHH flows there in yellow. That required more computing power than we had. According to the wiki, it might theoretically be possible. Aaron was able to come in and tell us, don't even bother trying, it's never going to happen. And we had to find somebody else to run that step for us. But aside from that step, this is something that this process is something that individual researchers can run on your work computers. So there are lots of decisions to make along the way when processing the data. Here's an example of just one script and the different parameters that you're outlining. I noticed that it's common in methods sections to see something along the lines of data were analyzed using mother. But rarely are all of these specific details given. If somebody wants to repeat the analysis, it's important to have access to these details. I think supplementary information is a great place to stick these, both so other people can repeat your work or if they want to be able to use the same methods and compare later. Okay, some quick tips from Aaron. Again, the kinds of things that if you're working on your own without a collaborator who is proficient in this might take a while to learn. Aaron says, mother's designed to work on the Mac, and the mother guys are Mac guys, so there can be bugs when running on Windows that you don't see with Mac. So if you're collaborating with somebody who's running on Mac and you're running on Windows and you're thinking, how come it works for them and not for me, it may be a function, inherent function of the way that the program is written. When it comes to text editors, the Windows text editor called Notepad can be goofy sometimes. Those are Aaron's words. It can add extra characters at the line returns that screw up mother. So again, small details that you may not think about that contribute to whether you're able to successfully go through the pipeline on your own or not. Same thing with tabs. Mother sometimes interprets one tab the same as two. So when you know some of these tidbits, it allows you to be able to do some troubleshooting of your data and the process as you're completing it. Okay, so take-home message. These community analysis tools like Mother, they are accessible. Even if you're a complete beginner or a mid-career scientist with Luddite tendencies, like me, if you choose to have a company do the analysis for you, there's still value in having gone through this, knowing what the process is, understanding the limitations and pitfalls. So finally, two quick slides on results with Michele's rice samples. About 4% of the total OTUs were found in both libraries. The vegetative library, you can see displayed had higher richness compared to the reproductive library. The hypothesis here, like 97-98% of all the hypotheses for any of these, especially very simple comparative studies, is that the two groups are going to be different. People rarely specifically define going in what they mean by different, but for this particular analysis, Michele and Aaron used 97% sequence similarity to define their OTU, which some people consider roughly equivalent to genus, though that especially depends on which genus you're talking about. The same data here displayed at the phylum level, again displaying the differences between the two libraries that were analyzed. Something that was new for me, the way that they did this analysis, is they took the OTU assignments at the 97% level, and they took the 97% output and assigned taxonomy there, and then worked back. So these are the phylum assignments based on the 97% sequence similarity. In the past, when I've wanted to work at a different taxonomic level, class level, I'll just analyze OTUs at 85% sequence similarity. So even this small detail, there's multiple ways to process the data that can end up impacting the final results. We saw Dr. Penton also talk about at the very beginning stages, the DNA analysis, DNA isolation can impact your results. These details, these methodological details, should be provided in supplementary information. So that's the talk. Michele is now working on figuring out the biological significance of her two different communities and plans to defend her work in 2015. And before I end, this is an old picture of the Naturalist Club. Oh, I see an extra closed parentheses there. There's a lot of value in some of the very cool work that is getting done by the larger groups, but there's also something to be contributed from smaller individual researchers doing the descriptive work that lays the foundation for other more complex functional-based studies. So thank you.